Okay, if you can go with me to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. The book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Today I'm continuing on my series on the Trinity verses. If you're not aware, please visit our website. Please listen to the first two in the series. We looked at Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 2 weeks ago. And last week we looked at Genesis chapter 1 verse 26. And so obviously we are going through examining these supposed proof texts that the doctrine of the Trinity uses to support that God is a plurality of persons. Well, now we come to the next verse, which is Deuteronomy chapter 6 verse 4. Okay. Let's begin reading from Deuteronomy chapter 6 verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. We don't need to proceed any further. This is the verse in view. In the Hebrew it reads, Shema Israel, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. Or in the Greek, it's Aku Israel, Kyrios o Theos imon, Kyrios is estin. What I'm going to do now is take you through some word studies. Number one, the first word I want you to view is the word Yahweh. Okay, now obviously some of you would know that with the later copies of the original Hebrew, they changed that to Adonai, but in the original Hebraic manuscripts, it's the word Yahweh, which is the proper or the sacred name of God. It means the one who is absolute, the unchangeable one, the eternally existent one. This is the proper name for God, Yahweh. It's a singular or a proper noun. The equivalent of the word Lord there in the Greek is that word Kyrios. That is the Hebraic equivalent of the word Adonai. So whenever you hear of the word Adonai, the Greek equivalent is the word Kyrios. The word Kyrios means Lord, Master, Ruler, or Owner. It's derived from the word suggesting someone who is strong or authoritative. That is what the word Kyrios means. Then the next word I want you to focus is on the word one, which is where we're going to spend, I guess, the remainder of our teaching on. The word one there is obviously, as you would know, the Hebrew word echad. The word echad means one, single, or first. And for those that don't know, the word one, or the word echad, is a singular, cardinal, absolute. Now, if you're scratching your head wondering what does that mean, I'll give you some definitions on that in a moment. The Greek equivalent of the word echad is the word is, for those that are Greek speaking. The word is means one in contrast to more than one. That's what the word is means. And that also is a singular, cardinal, absolute. And by the way, for those that are Greek speaking, you know that is the masculine gendered word for one. Then you've got ena, which is the feminine gendered word for one, and then you've got mia, which is the neuter gendered version for the word one, right? For those that are Greek speaking. So, but here it uses the word is. Okay, now Deuteronomy 6:4. If you're wondering, well, what has that got to do with the doctrine of the Trinity? What has this got to do with what we're talking about here? Well, we should all know by now that the controversy that has ravaged between Trinitarianism and Unitarianism has been over the concept of the personhood of God. And now this controversy has been extended into Deuteronomy 6:4, or the Shema. That's what the Jews call it, the Shema. This is the creedal confession of the Jewish faith. And the debate centers itself around the word one, echad. I don't know if you've gone on websites, if you've checked out, just type the word Echad in Google and you will get dozens and dozens of websites, articles that debate the Jewish word for Echad. Now, Trinitarianism maintains, this is the definition or the belief of Trinitarianism, and that is that the word Echad conveys a compound unity. Have you heard of this? Have you heard the way the Trinitarians say, well, the word Echad there, that word for one there in Deuteronomy 6:4 really means a compound unity, often used in the distributive sense. And they only say that because they're trying to tell you and I that within the one essence of God exists a plurality of persons. That is how a Trinitarian will explain to you the word Echad. It's a compound unity. Within that unity exists a plurality of persons. Hence, they understand this God in Deuteronomy 6:4 as a uniplural deity. Have you heard of that term, uniplural? That's what Trinitarians assert. Unitarianism obviously rejects this idea. It argues that the word Echad is strictly a numerical absolute, highlighting the fact that God is indeed a single being, hence a unipersonal deity. Now, what we're trying to understand is, what indeed does the word Echad mean? Does the doctrine of the Trinity lend itself credit to that definition, that Echad really means a compound unity? Or does it lend itself to the idea that Echad does not mean compound unity, but rather strictly a numerical absolute, a numerical value of one? What does it mean? How are you meant to understand Deuteronomy 6:4? Point one, do you read it like this? Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is a compound united being made up of a plurality of persons. Is that how we're meant to read Deuteronomy 6:4? Or do we read it as, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is a singular being, hence a unipersonal, a one person being called God? How do we read Deuteronomy 6:4? Well, let's explore some texts. Go with me first to the first verse, which is Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. I'm going to show you some verses that Trinitarians begin to use to teach that the word Echad means a compound unity. Well, let's have a look. Let's explore some of these key texts. The first one is Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. This is perhaps the most famous one that they throw at you. They throw this one at you and they say, see, this is what the word Echad means. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. It says, For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Or in the Hebrew, haya lebasa echad. Or in the Greek, eson de idio is sarkamian. Now, we're told that the word Echad here for one is a compound unity because it talks about a man and a woman coming together and becoming one flesh, right? So clearly the word Echad must mean a compound unity, does it not? No, it does not. Let's examine this text a little bit. Do you notice that the words they shall become, do you notice those words? They shall become are both a plural pronoun and a plural verb. Can you see where the plurality exists? It does not exist in the words one flesh. Rather, the words one flesh is a singular noun and a singular cardinal number. Please, notice where the plurality exists. They shall become. The plurality is not found in the number. It is found in the pronoun and the verb. What does this speak of? When we quote Genesis 2:24, we quote this, don't we? For those of us that are married, yeah? They shall become one flesh. What does that mean, they shall become one flesh? But what it simply means, what really the writer is trying to say is that they shall become one married couple. That's what it means. How many couples exist when I say one married couple? How many couples? One couple. Is there a plurality of couples within the one couple? No, there is not. This is exactly what the writer is trying to say, is that the plurality is found in they shall become, in the fact that there's two persons. But when he speaks of one flesh, he's clearly saying one couple, one married couple. There's no hint of plurality of couples within one couple. So this is, again, a wrong understanding of the word echad. Echad is stressing the number of the flesh, not of the plurality within the flesh. Does that make sense? Let's look at another example. Go with me to Genesis chapter 34, verse 16. Genesis chapter 34, verse 16. Another example that they use to tell us that echad is a compound unity. Genesis chapter 34, verse 16. It says, "Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters for ourselves, and we will live with you and become one people." Or in the Hebrew, haya leam echad. Or obviously in the Greek, esomatha os genos en. Now again, we've been told that echad is a compound unity. Please notice though, even in this example, the trend continues like you see in Genesis 2:24. We will become is a plural pronoun and verb. You see that? We will become. Is again a plural pronoun and a plural verb. Where does the plurality exist? It exists not in the word one, but it exists in the we will become. And then let's take it one step further. Look at the word people. The word people is a collective noun. It's not a singular noun. It doesn't stress singularity. It stresses, you know, collectivity. It's that word that stresses compound. The word people. It's a collective noun. So where again do you notice the plurality existing? Does it exist in the word one or echad? Or does it exist in the words we will become and words like people? Where does the plurality exist? It does not exist in the word one. It exists in the words we will become and the word people. I mean, folks, this is talking about becoming one nation. Right? How many nations... If I say to you, we are one nation, how many nations is it? Is it? It's one nation. Are there nations, a plurality of nations existing in one nation? No. So the plurality does not indicate, does not come from the word one. It comes from things like people. It comes from things like we will become. Let's look at another example. Go with me to Exodus chapter 26. Exodus chapter 26. Exodus chapter 26. Read with me from verse 6. It says, "And you shall make 50 clasps of gold, and join the curtains to one another with the clasps, that the tabernacle may be a unit." Now, obviously, in the Hebrew, it's hamimiskan echad, or in the Greek, iskini mia. That word unit really is echad, which really means one. It's meant to draw our minds to the idea that by clamping together the curtains, we are creating one tabernacle, is essentially what God is telling Moses. Yeah, join together the curtains, we end up making a tabernacle. Here's another verse that goes, the tabernacle is a compound unity. Right? But again, let's examine the text. Do you notice though it's not actually on the slide here, look at it in the Bible here. Have you noticed though that the plurality exists in words like curtains? clasps. Can you see where the plurality exists? It does not exist in the word one tabernacle. When we say one tabernacle, how many tabernacles were there? One tabernacle. Does the word one tabernacle tell you that there is a plurality within it? No, it doesn't. The plurality is derived from words like curtains, clasps, because that's where the plurality exists. Not the word one tabernacle, not the word echad. That word clearly stresses that there is one tabernacle there. If I read echad, I don't understand that there's a compound unity within that subject or within that noun. Look at another example, Numbers. Go with me to Numbers 13. Numbers 13:23. Here's another one that they use. Numbers 13:23. It says, "Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and from there cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes." We'll just stop there. So here's another one that they throw at you. A single cluster of grapes. Or echad eshkol enab in the Hebrew or in the Greek. Klimake votrin staphilis ena. So now they go, okay, there you go. Echad's a compound unity. Because we've got now one cluster of grapes. Again, the question is, where does the plurality exist here? Is it in the words one cluster, or is it in the word grapes? Where does the plurality exist? It's clear. It exists in the noun grapes. It's a plural noun. It's a collective noun, right? It's a plural noun. So the plurality exists in the word grapes. The plurality does not exist in the word one cluster. When you cut, you know, one cluster, how many clusters do you have?
One.
Certainly, you would not say that there's a plurality of clusters within the one cluster. Would you? Clearly, on this one branch existed a bunch of grapes. So the plurality is not in the fact that they cut one cluster. The plurality exists in the grapes. And yet, what we're finding here is that the doctrine of the Trinity, Trinitarianism, takes a handful of verses, such like these, that we've read, to try to teach you and I that the word echad is a compound unity, always used in the distributive sense. But what we're noticing here, that the word echad has never been used in the distributive sense. The plurality always exists in the nouns, pronouns, verbs. In our collective nouns, it's never used in the word echad. The word echad always means one. Does that make sense? I just want to say one thing, and that is this. That the word echad can be used with plural nouns or collective nouns to form sentences like this. One family. How many families is there when I say one family? One family. One crowd. How many crowds are there when I say one crowd? One crowd. We will become one. How many people are there when we say we will become one? Right? It's one. It's not a many. Again, when we say they are one, what are we talking about again? The plurality is found in the collective noun or in the plural noun. Never in the word one. We must understand that the plurality within the sentence is derived from the noun, the pronoun, and or the verb. Does that make sense? It is wrong to say that the word echad stresses a compound unity. The word echad, or is, equivalent, is a singular cardinal absolute. What is a cardinal number? Pick up any dictionary. English dictionary. World English dictionary defines the word cardinal number as a number denoting quantity. The science dictionary defines a cardinal number as a number used in counting to indicate quantity. See the key word there? Quantity. So when you're counting numbers like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to the nth degree, each number contains a quantitative value. So when you say 1, what's the value? When I say 2, what's the value? When we say 3, what's the value? Each number contains a value, and echad is, according to grammarians, a cardinal number. Let's explore that a little bit more. I've actually written an actual quote from Anthony Buzzard when in one of his articles. This is what he says. I want you to listen to this. He says, suppose now that we say one implies more than one. We could prove our point like this in the phrase one tripod. Is it not obvious that one really implies three? Does one dozen mean that one is really 12? Or 1 million? Is one equivalent to a million? Does this not suggest the plurality of one? What about one quartet or one duplex? To carry this madness to an extreme, we could argue that in the phrase one zebra, the word one really means black and white. So do you understand what he's saying? In other words, he's saying that so if one doesn't actually mean one, in other words, if one does not carry itself the quantitative value of one, then one can mean anything. Right? If we say one Bible, what we're really saying is 66 books. Right? When we say one, we don't mean one anymore. This is the madness we've descended to now. One does not mean anymore one. And how fitting now that the debate is happening over the backbone of the very Jewish faith, the Shema now. This is serious, folks, now. This is not just trying to count one and what does echad mean. We are dealing with the most fundamental verse of the Bible. Now, my next question would be, let's go to the next slide, is what would be a more appropriate word to use to define diversity within unity? You can't use echad. Let's look at a more appropriate word. Well, it's the plural form of echad. Perhaps we've forgotten that. It's the word achadim. There's a plural form of the word echad. It's the word achadim, which is a plural cardinal absolute, as opposed to echad, that's a singular cardinal absolute. Let's look at some examples. Genesis 27. Let's go with me, please, to Genesis 27. Genesis 27. Go with me, please, to Genesis 27. Genesis chapter 27, verse 44. Look what it says. And stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides. Go with me also to Genesis 29. A bit over to the right. Genesis 29, verse 20. Genesis 29:20, it says, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Have you noticed in both those verses the words a few days, or in the Hebrew, keyamim achadim? The word a few in English is the word achadim, the plural form of the word echad. Now, what do you think the writer is actually trying to say in Genesis 27, 44 and Genesis 29, 20? I find it striking that the plural form of echad, achadim, is used in conjunction with the word days, which is a plural noun. The writer is speaking about a long time period. When we talk about several days, what are we talking about? A long period of time. How many periods of time? One. How many periods of time? One period of time, but what was in that period of time? Many days. If you want to talk about a compound unity, it's the word achadim that is more suitably used to stress diversity within the unity. Let's look at another example. Genesis chapter 11. Go with me to Genesis 11. This one becomes even more striking. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. Look what it says. Genesis 11, 1. Now, the whole earth used the same language and the same words. Nothing too difficult, right, about the verse? But let's look at it. The same language. The words in the Hebrew, same language, is echad safa, or in the Greek, helos en. Now look at the word there, folks. Same language, or a better way of putting it, the whole world had one language. Right? Echad. Look at the word echad. The writer is using the singular cardinal absolute echad. One language. So how many languages did the people at the Tower of Babel have? One language. Was there any plurality within this one language? No. No plurality of languages within the one language. He's saying they had one language. Yet now, the writer is now going to divert our attention to the fact that within this one language exists a plurality of words. Same words. Achadim udevarim. Or in the Greek, phornia, mia. Look at the Greek word for those who are Greek speaking. Basin. What's the word basin in the Greek? All. Stresses plurality. Udebarim achadim. Now, in other words, what the writer is trying to say is the following. Is that he wants to bring our attention to the fact that these people at the Tower of Babel had one language. And yet, within this one language appears the plurality of many words, which we would today indicate one vocabulary. Does that make sense? So within this one language exists, when we say many words, we're talking about one vocabulary. So when I say to you, one vocabulary, isn't it clear that that is indeed a compound unity? That's what the word achadim Udebarim means. Within this one language, everyone spoke the same words. Everyone had the same vocabulary. Does that make sense? I find it very striking. This one verse, the writer was able to distinguish to you and I the use of the word echad from the word achadim. There's no plurality when he says one language, but when he says same words, there's the plurality. And there is the unit, the compound unity that exists in the words, in the phrase, same words. Let's recap on our next slide. Echad is a singular cardinal absolute. It is invariably connected with singular nouns and sometimes collective nouns. It expresses, this is the word echad, folks, it expresses the numerical quantitative value of one towards the noun. And it contains no hint of plurality within it. That's the word echad. Whereas, on the other hand, achadim, which is the plural cardinal absolute, it's always invariably connected with plural nouns. You will never find achadim connected with a singular noun. And it expresses either the plurality of nouns and or the diversity within a unity of that noun. So if I want to talk about a compound unity, the writers would use achadim over echad. Does that make sense? And the word achadim does contain plurality within it. So, let's explore some more text. Go with me to Isaiah 51. Go with me to Isaiah 51. What's my next slide? We'll leave that there for now. Isaiah 51. Isaiah 51, please. Isaiah 51, verse 2. It says, "Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah who gave birth to you in pain. When he was one, I called him." Did you see that? When he was echad, right? I called him. When who was echad? Abraham, right? When Abraham was echad, when Abraham was one, When he was one what? When he was one what? What's the writer trying to say? When he was one what? One person. Right? Isn't that what it's trying to say? I mean, we're talking about Abraham. We're talking about Sarah. And Isaiah says, when God called him, he was one. God called one person. God spoke to one person, did he not? Genesis chapter 12. Who did God speak? To Abram. Abraham was Echad. He was one person. Go with me to Ezekiel 33. It says the same thing about him. Ezekiel 33. Ezekiel 33. Verse 24. Ezekiel 33. Ezekiel 33 verse 24. Son of man, they who live in these waste places in the land of Israel are saying, Abraham was only one, yet he possessed the land. Abraham was only Echad. Again, how many is Abraham? When we say Abraham was Echad, how many was he? One what? One person. Let's look at other examples. Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. Verse 21. Genesis chapter 2 verse 21. It says, so the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon man, and he slept, and he took, what? One of his ribs. Or in the Hebrew, Echad Tselahim, or in the Greek, Mian Ton Plevron. So, he took Echad of his ribs. So where's the plurality now? Where is it? It's in the collective noun, ribs. How many ribs do we have in our rib cage? We have many ribs. God took how many? He took one. Did he take a compound unity of ribs out of him? He took one rib. Go with me to Genesis 21. Genesis 21. Genesis 21, verse 15. So speaking of Hagar, it says, and the water in the skin was used up, and she left the boy under one of the bushes. Under one of the bushes. Or in the Hebrew, Echad Hasihim. Or in the Greek, Mias Elatis. So, how many bushes did she put her son under? One. Where's the... Again, the word bushes is a collective noun. She put her son under Echad, under one of the bushes. How many bushes? One. Is there is it a compound unity when I say one of the bushes? No. One bush. Genesis 27, look at another example, folks. Genesis 27. Genesis 27 verse 38. Genesis 27 verse 38. Obviously, this is the story where Jacob received the blessing of his father, not Esau. And Esau said to his father, do you have only one blessing, my father? Or in the Hebrew, Echad Baraka, or Evloyia Mia in the Greek. How many blessings did Isaac have? He had Echad. So, how many blessings did he give out? He only gave one, and that was to Jacob. And now Esau's coming and going, is that it? You don't have more than one? What is Echad stressing to us? That it's quantitatively in value of one, not a compound unity. So you see, these are some examples that indicate that the plurality exists in the collective noun. Things like ribs, things like bushes, things, you know, like, crowd, people, nation. These are collective nouns. The plurality does not exist in the word Echad. You know, out of the many ribs, God took one. Out of the many bushes, Hagar put her son under one. Esau realized that his father had only one blessing, not many. It's simple, folks. It is wrong. This is a rule. It is wrong to draw the plurality out of the collective noun and to insert it back into the number. And this is what the doctrine of the Trinity is doing. It is taking the plurality that is in the collective noun and it puts it back into the number and says, see, it's really the number that contains within it the plurality. But it's wrong. Can you see through the many examples that the plurality exists in the noun, not in the number? Does it make sense? So what they've, you know, done very intelligently is derive the plurality out of the noun back into the number and say, see, echad really means compound unity. But we can't get past things like Abraham was one, can we? Clearly, it's talking about one person. Go with me also to Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2 verse 10. Look what it says. Do we not all have one Father? Has not one God created us? Or in the Greek, you know, oh sorry, in the Hebrew, Ab echad, El echad. Listen to that. One Father, one God. Hebrew words, Ab echad, one Father, one God, El echad. Right? Or in the Greek, Ispatir, Is Theos. Now, whether we're speaking of Abraham, the Bible calls him Echad. When we're speaking of God, the Bible calls him Echad. When we're speaking of the Father, the Bible calls him Echad. When we say Abraham was Echad, how many was Abraham? One person. When we say that the Father is one, how many fathers do we have? One person. So when we say one God, because it uses the same word echad when it talks about Father as opposed to God, how many gods do we have? One. Now, certainly no one's going to say that there's a compound unity within the Father. Are they? Can we say that there is a plurality of persons within God the Father? Because of the word echad that's connected to the subject? So if there's... No one would dare to tell you that. But if no one dare tell you that, that the Father's a compound unity, how can we turn around and say that God is a compound unity? It's clear that the writer is using what is called the parallelism here in the text. He's saying, have we not all one Father? Has not one God? He connects Father with God. He says, they're the same. The one Father is the one God. And he's an Echad. He's an Is. The one person that we come to know as the Father is the one person called God. Does that make sense, folks? Let's go to the next slide. So, if the Father is one person because of the use of the word echad, then the same can be said of the one God. He's a unipersonal God. So, let's go to the next one, please. So let's revisit now the Deuteronomy 6:4. Let's revisit the Shema. Because up until this point, we have understood the usage of the word Echad. We've come to understand that Echad is quantitative in value. It strictly means a numerical one. Let's go back and revisit the Shema now. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Or Shema Israel, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. Or Aku Israel, Kyrios o Theos imon, Kyrios is Estin. Let's look at the grammar a little bit closely. Yahweh is a singular noun. Echad is a singular cardinal absolute. It's completely identical in the Greek. Kyrios is a singular noun. Is a singular cardinal absolute. Do you see any plurality here? Grammatically speaking, do you see any form of plurality here in these words? There is none whatsoever. Now, What does this text speak of? Well, let's look at this. The text speaks of the Israelite God, right? Whose name is Yahweh. Remember, Yahweh is God's name. This is God's name, the sacred name of God. And this creedal statement was the backbone of the Jewish faith, which some of you would know would be recited daily, one in the morning, one in the evening. As a matter of fact, even the very last words to any faithful Jew before he died was the reciting of the Shema. Their very last breath that they would take before they died was the Shema. This creed stressed absolute belief in the one God. It was such a strong expression of monotheism, especially when they were surrounded by pagan polytheistic nations. God drummed it in. This is it. This is the backbone of your faith. And they would fiercely recite it daily, even unto death. As a matter of fact, one article that I read said that the Shema became the password by which one Jew was able to recognize another throughout the four corners of the globe. It became the password to every Jew. When they would meet a Jew in some distant land, the first thing was, tell me, let me test your Judaism out. What's the greatest commandment? That's what they did to Jesus. Let me test the Jewishness of his faith. This became the password. This became the barometer of whether you were a monotheist or not. So, the Hebrew word echad became to be known as the Greek equivalent of is. And the Greek equivalent is stressed the same thing. It was the cardinal, singular cardinal absolute. Let's look at some other usages here of the word now is in the Greek, to see how it's the Hebrew equivalent, echad. Go with me to Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, verse 29. Again, the Shema became the password for every Jew, so now Jesus has been put to the test. The scribe comes along and says, well, let's see how Jewish Jesus is. Let's see whether the backbone of his faith is the same as ours. Mark chapter 12, verse 29. Because Jesus, they asked him, what commandment is the foremost of all? What's the most important commandment? What is the backbone of, what is the creedal statement of your faith? Tell me, what is central to your belief? Jesus says, verse 29, the foremost is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Or in the Greek, Kyrios is estin. What was most important to Jesus? The fact that he believed in the one God. That was most central to him. He said the foremost is this. In other words, I agree with what is the backbone of our faith. What is the most creedal, vital, most important, all-encompassing commandment? This is it for me as well. Because obviously later on in the text, the scribe says, oh, well, we agree. I agree with you. Right? And do you see that word is there? For one there? One Lord? Kyrios is? That's the Hebrew equivalent, echad. Go with me to 1 Corinthians 8. 1 Corinthians 8. First Corinthians 8:6. Paul carries this continually in 1 Corinthians 8:6. He says, yet for us there is but one God, the Father. They're in the Greek, is Theos or Patir. So in the mind of Paul, doesn't this statement sound so much like the Shema? Isn't Paul right now in such agreement with Malachi 2:10? Do we not have all one Father? Has not one God created us? To Paul, is Theos. This one God is, or Patir, the Father. 1 Timothy 2:5. Let's look at another example. 1 Timothy 2:5. 1 Timothy 2:5, please.
1 Timothy 2:5.
For there is one God and one mediator also between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. Notice the words in the Greek, is garpheos. There is one God. And then there's the one mediator. And notice that the word is three times in these three verses is the Hebrew equivalent of echad when speaking of God. To the Apostle Paul, the one God was identified as who? The Father. Found an agreement with Malachi, even writing to Timothy here. Paul showed the distinction between the one God, the one person God, and the one person mediator who is Jesus Christ. Isn't it interesting that the words one mediator is also is mesitis to Greek speaking brethren, right? But it's the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Mark that are most powerful here. Because the utterance of Jesus when reciting the Shema, that creedal confession, he does not alter it and he certainly does not redefine it, does he? Jesus leaves it as is. The scribe comes to him and says, what is it? And Jesus says, it's as has been long written that our God, our Yahweh God is, you know, the one God. He doesn't alter it. He doesn't redefine it. He doesn't insert himself into it. He leaves it as is. So, who or what is Yahweh God? Who's Yahweh? Because that's what the text says in Deuteronomy 6:4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord. Yahweh is one. So we're speaking about, Moses connects Elohim, God, with his sacred name. We're talking about the name of God. We're talking about the fact that Moses has named who the Israelite God is. It's Yahweh. So, who is Yahweh? Is God a compound unity existing within it as a plurality of persons, like we would say a crowd or a family? Or is God strictly a singular being? Or in other words, one person. You know, again, all we can do is go back to the grammar and look at the words echad. Yahweh God is an echad. Kyrios or Theos in the Greek is an is. And so what are we saying now? If echad is a compound unity, then what does this say about Yahweh? If we're saying that Yahweh is a compound unity, are we saying that God the Father is Yahweh, God the Son is Yahweh, and God the Holy Spirit is Yahweh? I mean, they're saying that Yahweh is an echad. Right? That's what the text says. The Lord is one. Yahweh is an echad. And if echad means a compound unity, then we are saying that every person that exists within Yahweh is also a Yahweh. Now, if we go back to the doctrine of the Trinity, and we're saying God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, they all three must be now Yahweh, right? Or, and it's the same doctrinal model that tells us no, but there's no three gods, there's only one God, there's no three Yahwehs, only one Yahweh. But if there's a plurality of persons within Yahweh, then each of them must be Yahweh, right? Or, is it this? If echad is a numerical absolute stressing singularity in being and person, what does this now say about Yahweh? God the Father is Yahweh, no one else is Yahweh. Which one is more accurate, folks? Tell me. According to the usage of echad from Genesis to Malachi, the use of is from Matthew to Revelation, who is Yahweh? Is it all three members of the Trinity, or is it the one person which the Bible defines as Father? Who is it? Jesus, in his quotation in Mark 12:29, seemed to identify his Father as Yahweh or Echad and Is, to the exclusion of himself. Remember what it says in Isaiah 45 verses 5, 6 and 21? God says, I am Yahweh, there is no other. Does that make sense, folks? So, let's conclude now. This is what I say. In the minds of both the Old and the New Testament writers, they considered Yahweh, their God, as one, or more exactly as one person. namely the Father who is the Creator of us all, according to Malachi. The Jewish creedal confession was put in place to safeguard against polytheism, or, as I would call it today, pluriform monotheism. It's just an intelligent way of masquerading polytheism, which a lot of people wouldn't like me saying. But it is. It's called pluriform. The doctrine of the Trinity is pluriform monotheism. It comes across as monotheism, and yet it continuously pushes and pushes plurality. And I have to wonder how much monotheism that is. It was, the Shema was put in place to separate God's people as worshippers of the one true God in the midst of pagan polytheists. What began in the Old Testament, namely in the Shema, in Judaism, was carried down all throughout the New Testament. Jesus did not alter it, nor did the first church. It seems the New Testament data points to the remarkable fact that Jesus, Paul, Peter, John, and company held a monotheistic, or more expressly, a Unitarian view of God. It is dangerously wrong to alter the meaning of the word echad to make it sound like a compound unity. This idea is not agreeable within the parameters of the scriptures. The Trinitarian model fails to assert that the word echad does not mean strictly numerical one, but a collective unity. It's wrong. Words like echad and is lend itself powerfully to the fact that they carry the numerical quantitative value of one. Any plurality will invariably be derived from the subjective noun, not the cardinal number. That's a rule. That has to be a rule in the Bible. The conclusion of this whole matter is simple, that Yahweh God is unipersonal, and hence Christian monotheism ought to be Unitarian in its theological position, not Trinitarian. Let's stand.